Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much, Peter, for that very kind introduction. And I must say that on behalf of the board of, we have a board at Codex Australia, who would like otherwise to be here. They send their greetings and best wishes for the event of the Codex. There are other Australians in the audience here, including particularly the president of the Victorian Bookbinders Guild, Elke Ohakas. And so it's next Codex, I expect the entire board to be here. So we hope something like that happens. But I would like also to thank the board of Codex Australia for inviting me to talk. It's a great privilege and pleasure and a little scary to be in. I've never been in the front of so many peers before, and superiors for that matter. It's a very welcome thing for me. But I'd like to begin by dedicating this talk, for whatever purpose that might be, to two other Australians, with Cecil and James Johnson, who founded the Windsor Press in San Francisco, where they printed fine books from 1924 to 1943, including quite a number for the Book Club of California. So there have been other Australians here doing things too. The book Material Instrument. There is in Ezra Pound's Last Drafts and Fragments of Cantos 110 to 117 a poignant couplet that asks, "What do I love and where are you?" Not who do I love, but what. Yet the next line addresses that what as you, as if a thing could be addressed as a person is, with intimacy, affection, longing. Reading those lines again recently, I also thought of other lines, this time from Pound's friend Louis Zukofsky, who wrote in his work A12, "Each writer writes one long work whose beat he cannot entirely be aware of. Recurrences follow him, crib and drink from a well that's his cadence after he's gone." I wondered if this might also be true for painters, and I asked two friends, Max Gimlet in New York and Bruno Letty in Melbourne, whether they had been painting one long work all their lives. And their separate replies were, "Of course, what else do you think I've been doing all these years?" So I further wondered whether I have been printing and making one long book all my life. So under the pressure of this bit of wondering, my focus today is curving back to Ezra Pound as Orpheus to Eurydice. What is my book and where are you? Before I think of my book, I find that the telling giveaway term is not book, but the book, where it's less that the book is a problem than it is that the word the is a problem. The definite article, which seeks no special status for itself, there's hardly a noun anywhere it will not sidle up to, yet a kind of definitiveness can creep into the definite article, in which all kinds of loaded content can be hidden in the article's emphasis. As when the all too estimable Dr. Watson writes, "To Sherlock Holmes, she was always the woman," and we can feel that emphasis without ever articulating what that emphasis consists of. So often when we talk about the book, we're not referring to a specific volume or title or text, but to an idea of the book or a concept of the book, as if we can discuss the book in a general sense without being tied down to any one group, or any one book or group of books, that the book might be a proper noun that many of us have written or printed with a capital letter, as if each individual volume is merely an instance of the general idea that the book, capital B, exists in a prior and more important sense than any book, lowercase b, could ever exist. Apart from technological changes, changes that is in the way we do things, the things we do, like talking and making marks on surfaces, have often been subject to argument about which might have come first. And the ways we do things have often been subject to arguments about whether a new way should supersede an old way. But whatever position any of us takes in these matters is not meaning otherwise hanging like incense in the air all around us. As the New Zealand poet Ursula Bethel wrote, "The silence is vibrant with words." Is this where we posit and derive the notion of the book, capital B, that the world somehow is a kind of library and we never lose the sense that we are surrounded by and penetrated with words, with books, with meanings, which collectively add up to a sense of being here, which it pleases some of us to call a God or a truth or a book? What if I am unable to say of any object to which we can apply the term book that it is sacred? That I can only posit a human origin for such a thing and not a divine one? That I am unable to single out from the plethora of books any one for a status or a value that is beyond the status or value of all other books individually and collectively? What then? I am, of course, aware that many people who do not align themselves with specific religious traditions nevertheless have a sense that the book is still somehow, in some kind of non-religious sense of the term, sacred. But while I may be sympathetic to that sense, that is, there is something here being pointed at, I don't have that either. What if I think that any book, any volume, any codex whatever, is resolutely and only one book among all the others, as a Buddhist might say, merely one of the 10,000 things, none to be elevated above anything else? And herein lies my problem. How do I retain this common experience that there is something extra or supplemental to the collected things of the world, and validate the language with which I talk about it? To put it crudely, I want to state a value for the role of books in my life, and I want to say there is no transcendental book. All I want to be able to do with the concept of the book is to use it, have it, say it, value it, with no more extra or added on significance than I would want with the concept of a chair or a ladder or a tree or a bird. Nothing more nor less than simply, if simply were possible, an ordinary abstract noun, a genus even, of which fine books and artist books and private press books and commercial paperback books are merely species. And yet I value the book so much that I long ago decided to spend my life in its service. If the notion of the book is a problem, so is the notion that there might, somewhere in the world, be something I can refer to as my book. I make a book, and until I sell or show it to another, it remains, in most senses anyway, mine. But once the book is sold, then I may still own the copies I have at home, but I no longer own the sold copies, nor do I have any claim upon how they might be received, read, interpreted, or valued. The meaning and scope of the idea of mine changes the minute the work gets into the hands of another. Perhaps my poem or my book are sensible notions, if a little complicated, if we take it that the sole origin of poem or book is the poet or maker. But all the words in the poems have been used by English speakers and writers for centuries and on billions of occasions. What's mine about that? All the materials in the book I make were manufactured by others, and books' codices have been made in their millions for 2,000 years. Where does my book come into that equation? As far as I can see, my book has already been set up for me by the history of the community of which I am a member, and my book is, whatever else it is, an expression of that community and the history of its life. In what way could the works I have written and or the books I have made add up to a single poem or book or work or endeavor? Is it merely that, as poet Charles Olson put it, that we grow up many and the single is not easily known? Can I move from saying I have printed 55 or so books in 55 or so editions over 40 or so years to I have printed one book over 55 editions over 40 or so years? On an obvious level, this might appear simple, even simple-minded enough, but I'm having difficulty finding things to say that are somehow basic, somehow unarguable, somehow able to point to the tough things I might be forced to say by the ordinary everyday things I might be able to say. Every book, no doubt, is an expression in some measure of the total culture out of which and into which it has emerged, as if each new book is a newly discovered star in the total constellation of stars that we might be able to call book, capital B. And if I deny that a single book, lowercase b, could be the book, capital B, of the world, then it's possible that, if there ever could be a book of the world, then it is simply in the collected books of any and every kind that both grace and litter our physical, intellectual, and cultural lives, and that the name of that collective book is an abstract noun and not a proper one. One book all my life is inseparable from all the books of everyone else's life. And what is my book is perhaps as much a question about what selection from the plethora of books or what points on the constellation have I chosen in the course of a life in which I come and go from books as a daily rhythm, in which there is no physical context on earth in which I can say there are no books about me, in which the apparently simple act of reaching for a book on a shelf is an acknowledgement that we have no condition that does not have books as its context, and a provisional answer to Ezra Pound's question, "Where are you?" is everywhere, within and without you. Could we respond to Stefan Mallarmé's note that everything in the world exists in order to end up as a book? And I should note here, I adopt the translation as a book and not the more common in a book. They are little prepositions to be sure, but radically different in their consequences, in my view. By saying that everything in the world is already a book before it emerges into the world, in this sense, we are already book, and perhaps our life's journey is a process whereby we set out to alter or modify or rewrite or erase the legal, philosophical, cultural, linguistic, and other inscriptions into which all of us are born and which none of us choose at the outset. The question I started with, what is my book, is then a question about what of all the books we are born into and all the books we are subsequently given throughout our lives might we choose, and what might we find in the very acts of making the books we craft into life. It is not an assumption, not something we can reliably assert, but a search, and like the search for the poem we engage in the very act of composition. Louis Zukovsky's one long work, which he also calls Cadence, which is another question that I can't take up here. But the books I have made have been a rhythm between the books into which I have been born and those by which I have rescripted or have been rescripted in the process of being a specific human person in this place at this time. No wonder there is poignancy in Ezra Pound's poem. What do I love equals what am I both already attached to and seek at the same time? For there's no chance of success, no prospect of possession, no thing about which one can say it is mine, no ownership, and worse, no words to encompass it, and words, though words are all we have to go by, and words are what we print again and again and again. No wonder some people turn to making books out of images only, without words, without those glittering signs of failure that attend all our doings, all our achievements, all our perfect imperfections. Where is my book? I have sought it all over the place, in other books, in other words, in other images, and all the stars do is flicker on and off. The pages open and turn, the words fly in and out of our utterances, images loom in and out of view. And I'm trying every day, as Charles Olson said of Edgar Allan Poe, to whack a stake into the ground and hang on for dear life. What is my book, and where are you? Maybe the where of where are you has no answer. Perhaps it is a question only in its grammatical form. Where as anywhere or everywhere and nowhere in particular brings together the whole constellation and demands that one seeks among its innumerable possibilities. And the you, as we often say and mean, is oneself, that I too am to be sought always as an unfinished task and unfinishable business. To quote Charles Olson again, we are as we find out we are, and there is no end to that finding out, no limit to the where of our apparent question, and that book, capital B, is merely one of the names of that search among the already constellated yet ever-emerging 10,000 things, the 10,000 books of the world, of each other, and of ourselves. Thank you.
Thank Alan for what I would consider a very Parmenidean explanation of a book in his own personal terms. That was wonderful. Thank you, Alan. I'm going to take a second to look around and see how we're doing as a crowd. There are empty seats, which wasn't the way we planned it. We planned it to be completely full and that we would be turning people away. And I'm really, really happy that some people had enough of a hangover that we all got to sit down.